Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analyticshour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 61. You know, back when I first got into analytics, it was really confusing whenever anybody didn't understand how amazing analytics was. And the reality is, even today, the value of analytics is not readily perceived by a lot of the people who'd be best served by embracing it. Why is that? Well, we want to talk about it on this episode, Selling the Value of Analytics. Hey, Tim, would you like to buy some analytics?
Is it free? I hear Google Analytics is free. Can I get free analytics?
It's so free. And that's certainly this podcast is free. And well, welcome, Tim. It's a pleasure to once again join you. But to do this topic some justice, we needed a guest to agree with all the... we needed a guest to provide balance and counterpoint to Tim's extreme views. And we are excited to welcome Saif Sharif. He's the director of analytics at Sear Interactive. Prior to that, he was the analytics department lead at Lunametrics. We've talked about them before on the show. Really great group of people. Lots of Pennsylvania digital analytics excellence in the house. Welcome, Saif.
Thanks, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Nice. No, it's great to have you on the show. And so just to kick it off, so Saif, what was it about this topic that kind of, what brings you to this topic, and what are some of your kind of starter thoughts on this?
Like, what brings me to this topic? I mean, it's one that, I guess for me, I understand the value. And when I understand something and other people don't, it drives me absolutely insane. And it drives me to try and, you know, convince people, hey, you know, this is actually great. So that puts me
yeah.
Here.
Well,
it's not so much that like I enjoy it as much as it's like an obsession or psychological damage that propels me towards
yeah.
it. So.
No, it's an ever-present mandate, right? And yeah, I'm never more awkward than when I get too excited about analytics in corporate settings. So I'm right there with
right.
you.
Which always goes over well. Everyone loves when the data guy starts talking about,
yeah.
about numbers.
They're like, oh, quick, shut him down. His eyes are starting to shine.
I know my time at a creative agency, it was kind of like, you know, selling analytics was what the biz dev folks would. They saw it as this is easy money. They didn't really understand it. They knew they had to talk about it. It had to be in the RFP response, and they saw it as being an extra, you know, $20,000 on the contract, which was really, really tough because it was like they wanted to quote it as, you know, here's free money, but then you'd actually try to deliver value and it was a struggle. Whereas part of the draw to consulting for me was I felt like the clients already saw that they felt that there was value there and they needed help. Whereas you're kind of in the spot where certainly at Lunametrics, it was an analytics, I don't know, agency or consultancy, what they think of themselves as. And Sear definitely has a heavy analytics component, right? So are you still needing to sell service offerings / not getting, you know, too far inside the world of Sear, but how much are you having to sell? I guess, how much is, I mean, you guys do a lot of SEO search, SEM stuff, and it seems like to an analyst, it's just obvious that analytics goes along with it. But are you still needing to sell how much and what's required and what it takes? And are you needing to sell it to people within the agency or to clients or to both?
Yes.
Okay.
Like there is a lot there. Let me unpack it. So before even Lunametrics, I had my own agency for 10 years. And so where we did everything front to back, including creative and front end development and things like that. And, you know, started in with Urchin and that kind of stuff with tracking. And, you know, you go back that far and the stories about trying to tag on analytics to projects was difficult. if you wanted to get anyone to spend any money on it, particularly if they're coming for, you know, a website and you're trying to make a claim of, hey, you know, we're going to redo your website and we're going to try and increase your conversion. But to do that, we need to measure it and we need to do this work on the analytics side. And people are, you know, like kind of like you're saying before, it's great, but, you know, that's free, right? Google Analytics is free. So, you know, now step to the future, and we get a lot of, Etsira is mostly SEO PPC focused. So, you know, we're growing analytics at a rapid clip, but, you know, most of the work that comes into Seer is SEO or PPC first. And it can be SEO, PPC, and analytics, or it can be SEO and analytics. But there's a lot of stuff that comes in, and it's just people that, you know, they want to move the needle. They want more traffic. They want more conversions. They want more revenue. They're coming in for a business reason. And it's sometimes up to us to really kind of put them and make them understand your data is terrible. We can't make decisions from it. Our SEO team can't make decisions from it. Your conversion is offline in Salesforce, and so we can't measure the value of assisted conversions if we can't connect your website with your Salesforce conversions and get that revenue connected to assisted conversions. So sometimes it's easy. Sometimes people get it, and other times they don't. And there's very little. At a certain point, you just can't force people to give you money to do the right thing.
But there are legitimately people who are saying, I want SEO, and that's they're coming in thinking that means you're going to do an audit, you're going to tell us the best practices, and you don't really need to dig into the data. You just need to look at our website. I mean, is that...
Yeah, it happens.
I guess that happens?
Yeah. I mean, the metaphor I have for that, which is imperfect and I think does some disrespect to the PPC practitioners, is that people come in and they want the way they want to just pour money onto traffic and volume is I compare it to pouring gasoline on the side of your car and hoping some of it gets in the tank.
Nice.
Whereas analytics is what lets us kind of steer that hose, that, you know, the nozzle, let's get that in the tank a little bit more. And I even had the creative team whip up a little graphic of a guy literally pouring gas on the side of a car to really drive it home because, you know, that's what people want to do. And sometimes it's, you know, I get it for some people. Some people come in and they have their budget. They have their quarterly budget or they have their annual budget. And, you know, when you're dealing with these companies and they have outlined for 2017, we have $50,000 a month that we can spend on paid spend or something like that. But, and they have, you know, $10,000 a month that they can spend on SEO and they have $0 on analytics. So you come in and you say, well, we want analytics. Then, you know, they say, well, that's great, but I don't have the budget for that. Maybe next year. And so,
well, yeah. Or they assume that any analytics comes with the other stuff they bought. Like, oh,
right,
yeah,
which
that's just analytics comes with it.
Right. To a degree. And sometimes we'll bury, not bury, that's the wrong word. We'll include the analytics portions within a search project. But at the same time, that then takes away from our search team's ability to do their work. You know, if the search team is saying,
yep,
you know, we need to do $100,000 of work next year, and we say, well, we need to do $40,000 of analytics because this thing is garbage, then we're going to put out a 140K bid, and they're going to be comparing that against SEO contracts to people that aren't doing it the right way that are going to be significantly lower. And part of it's just doing it the right way. But at the same time, I don't necessarily want to, you know, hide it in there. But also some people will, you know, they're going to see it. It's analytics. They're going to see that we're doing their tracking. And they're saying, well, we don't need you to do tracking. We have, you know, Becky or we have, you know, whoever doing their analytics. And, you know.
I was going to say that name came right to you. So.
Well, there's a name. And it's not, yeah. There is a name and it's not Becky. And it's someone that. It's someone else that we've been talking to recently who literally has someone that they're paying a considerable amount of money to internally who, you know, doesn't do a good job at this stuff.
If you're inside an organization, do the SEO people and the analytics people work better together, or rarely do companies actually have those as formalized roles where they even would? They're going to outsource one or both of those functions.
I mean, I've dealt with companies where they did a great job. They had a really holistic internal team with people that owned their own responsibilities and they worked really well together. I still work with some of those companies. They are the exception in my experience. Now, I'm a bad sample because I have a lot of connection to people who have problems and they're coming because they have problems. So, you know, my hope and dreams are that there's a lot of people out there listening to this that are in wonderful environments and they've never actually had to come to me for help. Don't shake your head. They've never had to come to me for help. I'm an internal optimist in that regard that most of the people out there are wonderful. But no, I mean, most situations are, you know, from small teams that people get real territorial about what their jobs are to large companies that are just so siloed in the specific jobs from some people. I mean, to the point where there's companies I've worked with that don't even have a single person in charge of their paid ads. They have multiple people that don't communicate who each do different paid ad placement that ends up competing against each other or has competed against each other because they don't even communicate to that degree. So, you know, as far as SEER, it's definitely something that we work on very consciously to integrate our different teams and expertise so that we can go out when we're pitching someone, because that's what we're sort of talking about is like when we go to pitch people, we will bring, depending on what's going on, an analytics subject matter expert and a SEO one and a PPC one. And we'll each present what we want to do and how it interrelates to each other. So, you know, the paid ad guy might talk about remarketing and I might talk about using analytics to, you know, do some sort of cluster analysis where we can derive quantitative personas that we can do precision remarketing onto and blah, blah, blah. And how we can actually use the data they have and use that to lower their CPA and increase their ROI and their average order value and whatever else, and prove that value and have that tie together and say, these things all work together and we can do that.
Have you used the gasoline analogy in an actual pitch?
Yeah.
I like it. It may be flawed. The flaws haven't bubbled up for me yet. I like it.
Well, and it's interesting to me that we started looking at kind of through this lens because you could also flip it and say, hey, everybody believes in analytics, right? We're all want to be data driven, you know, so what's the dichotomy or the I want to believe the best, and yes, you're correct, like in practice, like it's not always I'm trying to be so politic right now. It's still not easy out there. And it's always surprising to me that we haven't come as far, how far we have not progressed together in terms of sophistication around digital analytics specifically. And certainly there's been growth. There's been tons of growth, you know. 8 years ago, you know, this concept of integrating external data was like, whoa, that's crazy. What are you talking about? And now it's pretty common. Like, it's pretty understood. But do people do believe, like, hey, I need to get this data. We want to be analytical. And maybe you hear it come out in certain phrases or words that even people don't even necessarily understand what it is they're saying when they say it. It's like, when I hear that always gets my dander up, I guess, is we want to do quote unquote advanced analytics. And okay, well, what does that mean to you? Like, but they do want to do something, but it's often like kind of in this weird world of like not real meaning. So that's another aspect of having to go sell it from my perspective is, okay, we need to make it real. You know, how do we bake it down? What's your guys' take on that?
I mean, to me, I think that it's I'll get on a call with people and I'll ask a lot of questions. And that's really the starting point because people will come in and they say, well, we want real-time dashboards. They'll say we want to be data-driven. So it's, why do you want real-time dashboards? What do you mean by data-driven? What does that mean? Because, you know, I've sat in meetings with people who, you know, you're in an annual meeting and they say, this is the year of data and we are going to be a data-driven organization and, you know, we're going to invest in data this year and it's important. The only way that we're going to reach X revenue is through data. And okay, guys, how much do you need? No, make that a little bit smaller. Little bit smaller.
But are you saying they're playing buzzword bingo a little bit? That, yeah. How much do you go down the path of probing and finding out there's not a whole lot of there? It is a CMO or a CEO or somebody has decreed it, and everybody has said, I understand that term. Now I'm going to run off and tell my agencies or my partners or my team that we need to do this. And then as soon as it's a little bit of an emperor has no clothes, like, well, what? It's you were, I was hearing in my head the, we want real-time dashboards. Well, what for? Well, so we can make real-time decisions. Well, so we can get real-time insights. It's like, well, what are those insights going to look like? Well, those insights are going to be like, that way we can make recommendations. They're going to be
real-time.
They're going to be real-time. So how do you... I do feel like I've headed down that sort of path of like, I'm trying to probe, and then I'm starting to hear myself starting to potentially sound like a dick because I'm not accepting their answer, when the reality is I'm like, no, I genuinely have not yet uncovered what I've uncovered is, oh, maybe you don't have a whole lot of clarity of thought there. But when you're trying to sell, you really, most salespeople would say, you know how to sell, maybe try not to be a dick. That's not going to help you close the...
It's situational. Yeah. Sometimes that works for you. But
it's true. I would say it's probably a good rule to just, if you want to sell someone, don't be a dick to them. It's probably a good rule.
Words to live
by. But how do you get into that when... I mean, as you said, the real-time dashboard is like a perfect one. Or we want to, or the other one where their technology vendor, they're using Salesforce or they're using, pick your third-party vendor who has given them the story of we can integrate, we're Teradata, we can hook in your data, and they tell this surface-level story. So then they turn around to the analyst and say, isn't this going to be awesome? We're going to do, X. We're going to do this data connection thing. And you kind of want to step back and say, but wait a minute, what are you really trying to accomplish? And how do you kind of become instead of the gasoline going in the car, you're a wet blanket saying, hold on there, cowboy, you're going to spend a lot of money on technology and you don't really know what you're trying to do.
Yeah. And sometimes, I've had conversations where I've basically said, look, I don't want to be selling you right now. I want to kind of be your data fiduciary where I want to represent you for a little bit, because people have these grandiose budgets where they say, I'm going to spend $30,000 on this tool and $60,000 on that tool. And I'm looking at their site and it has classic Google Analytics triple tracking with a traditional tracker at the bottom. And it's kind of like, okay, guys, appreciate where your heart's at, but like, that's the gold. Let's talk about the golden city on the hill. Like, what is that? And then let's step backwards to where you are now and figure out what we need to do to take each step to get there. And so sometimes it's just a question of like, what decisions do you want to make? Like, what do you see yourself making as far as decisions on your site or your app or whatever? It's not just, oh, we want to make real-time decisions. Like, okay, about what? Do you want to be able to make your paid campaigns more efficient? Do you want to increase your conversion rate? Do you want to, determine what content is good that at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday, and so you can post more cat photos or whatever? It's just, what is it that you want to do that you can make decisions on that you want to track? Where are we at right now? And all these questions in between, how you want to report on it, how you want to interact. Do you have a team internally that's going to be coming up with the insights or not? I mean, that's where, and I'd mentioned another metaphor was the sailboat metaphor, where we had a client that they came in and we built them out a great analytics implementation, but we had no ongoing support built into it, which I generally prefer to have built in because data is entropic and that as soon as you walk away from it, it's going to start falling apart again. But they didn't have that because of budget, and we finished the project and he called me up and he said, Safe, you built me this great sailboat, but now I don't know how to sail it. How am I supposed to sail this boat? And I think that part of it is our responsibility when we're selling analytics to not just talk about the tool or the implementation, but that insight part, because that's the whole point. That's where the value comes from. It. You don't get value by having a sailboat in dry dock. I mean, some people do, but we don't like those people. you get value by sailing that boat to Hawaii or wherever. So, you know.
But is that a challenge that people actually don't, you know, I mean, I like that analogy, but is that a challenge that it is so easy to get sucked into? If we just had a more perfect implementation, then we would just get insights. Like the insights would be easy. A perception that it's 90% of the effort is getting the data and 10% of the effort is getting the insights, when it's really more like 20% is getting the data and 80% is the thought and the work to get insights. I am making up those ratios.
Right. I'm doing the math. I'm like, I don't know if I... I mean, whatever the ratio is, I think that there are people that... I mean, it goes both ways, right? There's people that think... there's people that think that they can get historical data before they've even placed GA on their site. You know, they think that insights are not just free, but, you know, omniscient in some way. And then there's people that think the opposite, that there's people that think the implementation is basically easy and free, and people that think the insights are basically easy and free. Oh, you can just, I can have my cousin's nephew's brothers in his garage install GA on the site, you know? And so some people are going to value one or the other, and some people will value both and neither. It's just a matter of kind of figuring out who those people are and how to approach them, I guess.
The selling the value of analytics, it kind of pivots to selling the necessary portfolio. I mean, it winds up being the abstract people, process, technology. There's part of me feels like, as I'm listening to you, you know, when you say that you're going to be the, you know, fiduciary for someone, I'm thinking of the salesperson in the room just cringing like crazy, saying, right. "Say no. Yeah. You're supposed to tell them. You are supposed to tell them that you have the answers." I've run into this in my past as well. Oh, and even currently with teams that I'm working with internally, when I'm like, "Well, we need to ask the questions of what problem are we trying to solve? Are we all on the same page?
Right.
What are the questions that if we could answer, we could act on?" And literally, I've got just an array of mental images of people. Mostly this was agency side, sales and account managers saying, no, that's your job. We need to tell them that you are going to come up with that. If whatever you need for analytics, you're responsible for doing it. And that includes figuring out what the business problem is, framing the question, developing the hypotheses, digging into it and making recommendations. Like that was my... hands down, my number one frustration when I was at a creative agency was being told what my job was, which was much broader. Now I'm getting old enough and have been in marketing long enough that I can do some of that other stuff, but it's not efficient. Like, and you're not going to be happy that 80% of my bandwidth is going to be spent doing what is marketing and strategy and thought work that could have been reduced drastically by having an in-depth conversation. So,
right.
I guess like that's selling the value, but do you also wind up needing to sell? Yeah, there is value here, but it's not just the technology. It's not just the technology being implemented. It's not just the technology being linked up to other technology. And it's not just a smart person who knows how to punch the buttons on the tool. Those have to go together with some independent thought and partnership. And that seems to me to be like part of the challenge of selling the value of analytics is you're selling that it's not a magic. You don't just get there. There's work right. involved to get to that value.
There is, yeah. And so, well, let me crack a Blue Moon, if I can mention a brand, which is Simo Ohava's favorite beer. I mentioned that I wanted to make sure Simo knew that I was drinking a Blue Moon.
Digital Analytics Power Hour, brought to you by Blue Moon.
Blue Moon. Love you, Simo.
And Powder Milk Biscuits.
Yeah, so, I mean, one thing I'd say respond to there is how... You know, I've been places before where the salespeople aren't SMEs, right? They're not. They didn't grow up in the trenches.
Subject matter experts. We'll have that acronym spelled out on our show page for anybody who is not familiar with the TLA, that three-letter acronym. Carry on. Train of thought.
Pardon me. I mean, even our director of BD at Sear, he didn't grow up in the trenches. He's a finance and sales guy, but. The thing for me when I'm out selling it is that I have been in the trenches. I know what is possible and what's not possible, and I've been there. And I think luckily at Sear, which isn't every place, but Sear, I'm able to tell people, you know what, we can't help you. Or what you want's not possible. Or, you know what, I don't like the tone you have on the phone. So good luck. in finding someone. We got plenty of work coming in that we don't need to, I don't need to have my people dealing with someone who's going to be a jerk to them, because that just ruins everything.
God, you're sounding a lot like Michael Helbling right now.
Easy does it. Search Discovery, we accept any and all clients until we don't.
Everyone comes in and gets the same hourly rate.
Well, but you're absolutely right. There are organizations who are or are not ready to kind of, and I view it as a journey, right? There's a progression that has to happen within an organization. And most of the time, and like some of the things you've brought up in that word, I'm a big fan of the word fiduciary. Just want to get that out of the way right off the bat. But a lot of times they come in and say, oh yeah, we want to do real time or predictive or whatever it is. All wonderful things. But it's like, okay, well, what are you doing today with your data? How much do you trust your current implementation? Oh no, it's pretty broken.
Oh, it's a mess.
No, nobody. Yeah. We don't use that for anything. Well, how are you gonna do, you know, step 10 if you're not doing step one? And then that's usually when you can kind of, you know, pull it back in. But it's a lot of, and honestly, you know, to quote a beloved and former podcast colleague, you know, it's the hype, lies, and shitty sales guys, right? It's the, we are a vendor driven industry to a large extent. A lot of the education that people get comes from dominant vendors in our space who tell people, if you buy our products, what comes with those products automatically is all these high value outcomes. And the reality is that, and all of us know, and all of our wonderful listeners know, that is not true, that those products are wonderful, but there is a lot of work that comes in between those products and those high value outcomes that people are wanting to invest in. And I think that's at the crux of kind of this conversation, which is what's the best way to help companies and organizations understand, you know, the things you want aren't wrong, but the steps you need to take to get there are measured and certain and start in a place that you're not actually considering today. And I don't feel like I'm quote unquote disagreeing with people when I sit across from a table and tell them that, as much as I'm just saying the path is there, but it's like the, you know, I'm a big fan of, Kung Fu movies. You know, the brash young guy comes up to the old, you know, monk and, you know, he's like, oh, I'm awesome. And the monk is like basically, you know, super humble and, you know, kind of kicks his ass.
I was wondering why you're wearing a kimono, but now.
Yeah. Well, yes.
He's going to open the kimono later. We're going to use that a little.
When you can snatch this KPI out of my hand, you will be ready. No. That's kind of the idea. It's like, well, we've got to start at the beginning, right? The first thing you have to do is learn how to stand on your own two feet. And then you start balancing, and then you start, you know, kicking the crap out of things or whatever.
So for the analyst inside a company that has finally spent 2-3 years building credibility, building relationships, and they've finally gotten the budget to switch from GA free to GA premium, so their life is going to get much better because they now have a bunch of things they can do stuff with. But they also are understaffed, and they have now gotten, and maybe this is they've already tripped up by chasing the technology too far, but there was a step function of, we need to get GA premium, or we need to go to Adobe, we need to overhaul. And then I feel like I've seen analysts in this situation where they're saying, I can't go back and ask for more, a lot of times being people, because I don't have enough bandwidth to service all the blocking and tackling and kind of do the other stuff on top of it. How do I convince the owners of the holders of the purse strings that, yes, we spent whatever this amount of money on Adobe or GA, and yet that's not enough, we're not done, because I am terrified they're going to come back to me and say, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I just cut a big check, and I've signed up for this in perpetuity, basically. Like, I know I'm going to have to pay this every damn year, and now you're telling me you want more. What is that analysts move to say, yeah, but I'm not done spending money before I can get value. Right. Or they just got to be scrappy.
I think if they're in that position, that's a tough spot. Okay. So what I probably would recommend to people is before they buy Adobe Analytics or GA Premium, that they're already showing value and proving ROI through analytics. If you can, yes, GA Premium 360 branding is, you know, has more stuff in it. And if you have enough traffic, then you can get rid of the sampling, or maybe you do double click, or you know, whatever. But you can, GA Free is a pretty strong tool to let someone who's scrappy bootstrap their analytics to showing value. Everything we do is, I mean, once you get to a certain point, yeah, we're talking about all these expensive tools, but you know, you could put me down at a startup, but don't, because I don't want to work on a single product. I like agency life. But like, you could put me down in a product, say like the Oscar Mayer Wiener Rover. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's amazing. It's like a big, it's like a RV Wiener Rover that has hot dogs in it.
Oh yeah, you mean the actual Wienermobile?
No, not the Wienermobile. It's like an RV that's like a controlled RV that is like a four-wheel RV radio-controlled thing that carries hot dogs in it that looks like the Wienermobile, but it's like a tenth the size, and it's amazing. Anyway, but you could put me in charge of selling that product, and I don't need to spend any money on tools. I could say, okay, we're going to put GA on the Wiener Rover site, and we're gonna use GTM, and we're gonna add some events here, and we're gonna track the transactions there, the sales of the Wiener Rover, and whatever else. That's as long as the knowledge is money, but the stuff is free to do it. If you're not already showing value by making decisions, insights, something with free GA, then it's a mistake, I think, to think that spending money on GA 360 or Adobe is gonna solve your problems. And if you are able to already say, hey, we made 16 decisions last year based off the data that optimized the Wiener Rover blog and brought in X number of more conversions, you know, we saw this content opportunity, so we created this content, and it went from 0 conversions to 16 conversions, and we got a, you know, whatever order from Toys R Us. So if you're proving your value on the free stuff, I think that the people are going to start writing, not blank checks, but they're going to start listening to you when you say, if we had this tool, I can escalate it. I had a 20x ROI last year with the free tool. I think I can get a 40x ROI if you give me Adobe Analytics or GA Premium. And this is why. And I think at that point, you've proven yourself. If you haven't proven yourself with an ROI from your insights and you're stuck there with Adobe or GA 360, I would almost say, you know, bite the bullet and say, you know what, we're not ready for this. We're going to stop paying for it and we're going to use that budget for something else until we're ready for it. And that would be my advice to that person, is not to dump more money into the problem, but to actually dial back until you can prove value first.
I disagree with you, not at all.
We were so close.
My heart racing. Oh, no.
No. I mean, I can still hear the analyst saying, but because I've heard this so many times, but you don't understand. We're just so slammed. I have a client right now that it is, but I just have so many requests that I have to fulfill. I can't find time to do the real analysis and find the insights. Now, a lot of times what I find is I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're kind of a shitty analyst, because even when I'm stuck in that, I will basically find a way to prioritize my way so that I've got the bandwidth to actually chase the cool stuff and show the value. I mean, no, so I agree with you 1,000% that even if you need to go figure out how to go do some cleanup on your implementation, it is getting easier and easier and easier and easier to get around sampling issues, as long as you're not, you know, hung up on using users. And okay, users are great and that's all wonderful, but there's a shit ton you can do with sessions and you know, other stuff. So
yeah. And honestly, like, it's good. same for me within an agency setting, not just internal. I mean, we do a lot of weekly analysis and biweekly analysis and monthly analysis and reporting and all this kind of stuff. We have a lot of that we do for people because they don't have the internal resources. And I mean, I have a lot of people, but I call them my raptors. I have these three associates that these three girls that sit in a row, and whenever I round the corner, they all kind of turn and look at me. So I kind of get scared by them. and they, they're great. Everything that they do, we record every insight that we put down, and then we track it. So if we're giving someone three insights this week, then we record those insights. We record what we said, how we'd measure it, what our hypothesis is, and then we follow up with them on, did you follow up on this? Did you do this? And if you did, then we annotate and we look and we try and prove before and after value. Because if you're not doing that internally, like, that should be the core of your job. If you're an analyst, you should be looking for stuff and then documenting it, trying to get the change, and then, and using annotations and documenting it and trying to say, is there a difference before and after? And being okay with it being, no, we did this. It didn't work. It's okay.
Yeah, or hey, we actually gave you the stuff. You nodded your head, but, 80% of it, when we asked you about it later, you didn't do anything with this. So it seems like that's another fiduciary. Hey, I could try to sell you more stuff, but based on past evidence, you're not actually going to act on it. I mean, I think that's a great internally as well to do that.
Yeah, and sometimes people might be actually, I might be able to, if I was like that kind of guy, I might be able to talk certain people into doing a weekly analysis and saying every week we're going to do an analysis and we're going to get it for you. And there's people that I've talked to that I probably could have gotten to do that. And instead I said, let's start with monthly. It's a lot less money for me. And if you're able to act on it, act on the insights we give you and quickly, and you want more, then we can increase and we can go to a faster pace. Because the other thing is, like, if you're making insights and no one's doing anything with it, if you're the analyst in the corner of the office and you're shouting, you've got a Cassandra analyst or whatever, you're shouting stuff and no one's listening to you, then, you also might as well just turn off your GA.
Yeah, one thing I think I'd want to say, though, is I do think it's potentially possible to come up this curve taking maybe two stairs at a time. And if you've got the right approach or the methodology, you can advance it. So, for instance, if I have line of sight into the value creation that happens with me buying, say, GA360 versus staying on the free version, and I've got a way to get there, if we do these things, we can get this value out, then I'm okay moving forward. I still am a pretty big believer in sort of an iterative or incremental approach, but I've grown in my confidence of, okay, we can jump out a little bit further because we know what to do in those intermediary steps very quickly. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with that, but I just wanted to say it because, I haven't talked that much.
I agree with you. I mean, I think it depends on what those double steps you're hopping are, but I think that,
Well, right over implementation, anybody can do that. It's really easy.
I mean, I got a guy with a garage. He's his cousin's brother.
Yeah. You just just read Simo's blog, and boom, you got it.
Yeah.
What else do you need?
You read the Lunametrics blog, the Simo blog. You write Avinash. You read Daniel Weisberg. You listen to this podcast. You're good to go.
Hey, I'm glad you rattled off a bunch of people, and I would agree with almost all of those.
Yeah. For the record, we will not be giving any implementation tips and tricks on this podcast ever. So hit stop and delete this from your feed. No, I'm just kidding. So one thing, we've talked a lot about it from sort of our perspective, but for people sitting in the chair at their company trying to figure out what they can do to drive additional value so that they can be, kind of move their organization in the right direction, what are some practical ideas, maybe some quick ideas of how do you think about moving the needle?
So I would say to the person in the chair, hello, don't panic. It's okay. We're all with you. And we're watching. We have cameras installed. The measurement protocol is activated. No, I think that it's look for ROI and value. Segment your audience. Look for, at the most basic level, just get into GA and, even just comparing time range differences across metro areas or, anything about any kind of simple difference, and look for change that you can identify as opportunity. It's hard to really say what that is for every company, because it can be really different. But, you know, it can be, hey, our visits from, our visits to our school page from India are up 14% over last year. We should do something about that. And then, and you know, pass that information on to the international recruiter or whatever. You know, so what is the value? What is the objective? You know, kind of maybe even dive back and do a measurement strategy for yourself and say, what is the objective of the organization? What are the primary goals that measure success? What are the secondary goals that drive to the primary goals? What are the behaviors and engagements on the site that drive to secondary goals, to primary goals, to the objective? Who are my audience? What are they made of? Are they, you know, how would I define them? How would I define them based on their behaviors on the site? How can I then segment them in my data based on my assumptions of how they behave and what they consume and how they'd act and how they convert? And then use those segments and use that engagement and look for differences and changes and trends and things like that. And, you know, kind of, if you don't have it, start with that strategy and go from there is what I would say.
So, shoot, I want to blend those two together and kind of go right down the middle and say, figure out the people who actually have roles who are going to be receptive and what, even if you're not engaging with them, like I mean, I built this thing. I think I blogged about it a while back that was like a search. It was taking a couple different people's ideas about site search. Like site search is just such easy pickings for like a gift to give to the right people. And if you've got somebody who's managing their site search engine, or if they're a content person, and you know, Nancy Coons years ago, like talked and blogged about the whole, you know, just do a regex for who, what, why, where, when, how on your site search terms and just give that to the right person. So I think that's like trying to figure out who the people are who are receptive, who are also reasonably well regarded in the organization, and just kind of surprise and delight them with a few gifts that does fall on the more, maybe it's on the more tactical, but that's kind of bridging between the, you have the data, you have to understand the organization and what they're trying to solve enough to scrap together some stuff that nobody asked you for, but that you found. And even if it's not something that drives them to, oh my God, this changes the business, they're like, holy shit, I should be talking to you. You can actually help me do stuff. But then actually trying to find the person who you know is going to be off when you're not around and saying, wow, you know, Tim gave me this cool thing. And I'm so on the same page with you from the grassroots. Like, you got to show value before you ask. It's a lot easier to sell when you've already, you know, delivered value than it is to say, just believe me, just, you know,
yeah, but trust me. I totally agree with you though. I mean, like, what's the point? Again, you don't want to be like that Cassandra in the corner screaming to nobody. So like, I think your point's is totally valid, because you want to create allies in your organization, and you're going to create those allies by, you know, not just like screaming from the corner, but you want to find those allies, and you want to provide them, like you're saying, it doesn't have to be the most amazing thing in the world, but if you start providing other people value, then they're going to see you as value. They're going to see analytics as valuable, and they're going to become defenders and supporters of you. And they're going to be those triangulation points where you're not going to go. I mean, really, that's what you want. You don't want to be internal to an organization and going to your boss and trying to talk them into giving you more money. You want everyone else in that organization to be exactly. Going to your boss and telling them to give you more money. Like, that's what you want to happen. You want Becky in e-com to go to him and say, he's providing me great insights. Like, you need to give him more money to do X, Y, Z for me.
Yep. No, that's good. And I think that's right. There's a balance in between, because if your organization, no one's asking, then you try to hang out in hallways with some really sweet analysis and share to people. Or if there are people asking questions, you find out how to help them with that. And build.
You said that, and the image in my head was like the nerdiest guy in the world standing in a hall with like a stack of papers and like, let me tell you about the conversion rate, and like a guy walking along and like, knock out of my way, nerd.
Get out of my, hey, I have lived that. Okay. No, this has been,
it's my life.
This is me. No, this is really good conversation, and I think helpful, at least structurally. So Saif, thanks again so much for coming on the show. One thing we like to do as we wrap up the show is to do a thing called, we call the last call. We go around the horn, just see what's interesting out there. What have you seen lately that kind of piqued your interest and you think people would want to hear about. So we'll kick it off. Safe, what do you got?
The thing that really jumped out to me the past week was I was looking at a number of these really creepy kind of tracking things that are either the beacon technology in mobile devices or companies where they track people and look at what they're browsing. You know, they have a product that they put on your computer or your mobile device, and via that they track you like ComScore, and you can then see everywhere they went, or on the mobile device with the beacon technology, they can see every store you went into before you came into the local one. Because we're looking at doing a lot of, like, on the analytics side, we're trying to help our local SEO team prove the value of local SEO. So we're looking at these kind of things to say, you know, what can we do on an analytics side? And, you know, I got to say, I mean, there's a certain point that we're going to get to that, I mean, I used to be the guy of like, let's track everything. And some of this stuff is really like, if people knew knew what this stuff does, like, it's going to freak people out. I mean, it's like, wait, you know what car dealership I went to before I went and bought that Subway sandwich? Like, stop. That's really creepy. So I don't know. I mean, like, would I use the data? Absolutely. So maybe I'm a complete hypocrite, but no, it's still, I feel at some point we're going to, in our industry, we need to be careful because we're going to hit a wall and we're going to get backlash if we're not careful.
I feel like in a bizarre way, I have a complimentary last call to that. And that it came up a while back, but the fact is it came up over a decade ago. And this was a conversation on the Measure Slack a few months ago. And it was a term that I didn't really know, which was functionalism. And I was like, I don't really know what that is. And then somebody pointed me, and this is a blog post by Gary Angel from August of 2006. So it goes back a ways. And I don't know that it's necessarily right. I don't know that it still fully applies. What kind of struck me is, what he was talking about was, and this is a little simpler times for the web where we just had websites with pages, and he was saying, look, you should look at every page on your site and say, is it a page that's there for routing? It's routing people to other places on the site. Is it a page for explaining? Is it a page for closing, getting people to do something? Is it a page for reassuring? Is it a page for completing? Is it a thank you page? And sort of talked about these different sort of functions of pages on a website. And I don't know how much it applies today. There's part of me wants to kind of reach out to Gary and say, hey, what do you think of that? How does that apply now? It struck me as being like, I have no memory of that when it came out. It doesn't seem like it really got traction. I'm sure it applies to some much larger body of work that others have talked about that I just wasn't familiar with. And what made me think about it is now that Gary has kind of jumped from the digital world to more of the offline world with his latest venture, I was like, oh, maybe he's doing some of that creepy. Maybe some of his beacons are saying, is this car dealership an explainer, a router, or a closer? But it was kind of more like a historical. It's actually, in Gary terms, it's practically a tweet. I mean, it's only like, you know, a couple of screens long, and he is kind of known to be very, very detailed, but it's very readable and just kind of a fun little walk through web analytics philosophy of days past.
We should put that link on the podcast page when you're...
Oh, we will. Where our podcast links are, our link pages are getting more and more lengthy and bizarre and catching.
Wow. Little. I like it.
Yeah. The Wienermobile. The Wienermobile RC will be absolutely linked. I assure
I have
you.
An animated GIF I can send you.
Oh, that's perfect. We don't have one of those on the site yet, so that's great.
And yeah. Now we're into the GIF versus GIF. Michael, you have a last call.
It's
well, it's GIF.
No, so yeah, my last call is morphing rapidly. So I guess it's a threefer. First, it's a GIF, and everybody knows that. No, so it's interesting, Tim, because back in 2006, I was reading Gary Angel's post about functionalism and rapidly deploying it as best I could figure out from his, at that point, more cryptic than later years blog posts. So it's a cool blast from the past. Secondly, I would just say, given Safe, your last call, let's all remind our listeners of the DAA's Web Analyst Code of Ethics. Maybe a good reviewer that there.
Wow. Also a bit of a blast from the
past. Yeah, I know. But hey, here we are, though. And then lastly, a little while back, the DAA also came out with a new compensation survey, which I have found interesting. So it's been a few years since they've done some of that research, and I think it's a pretty decent approach. Always it's a struggle to capture the amount of data that you need to really be able to like be as descriptive as you need to be across like all levels and geographies. But all that to say, if you are a DAA member, or oh man, I'm going to say this and I'm probably going to get in trouble later. If you know a DAA member, you can get a hold of that survey. It's good just to be aware of what you're worth out there in the marketplace. And if your current company's not paying you enough, then I'm just kidding.
Discovery.com/career.
No, I don't know what our. I don't know. We're full up. We don't need any new people yet.
One question though. If you say GIF, is that because G is for graphic?
I don't know. It's not. It's like a lot of words in the English language. It's not intuitive. It doesn't follow the rules. But it is a GIF.
Okay. Because when people say a GIF because G is for graphic, then I say then you should say JFEG instead of JPEG because the P is for photographic.
Yeah, and I don't believe it's for graphic. I believe it's just because it's GIF. And it's sort of, you know, like English is a terrible language. We do a bad job of making Spanish is frankly much better a language to learn in my opinion.
I respect you being wrong on this issue.
Hey. And it has been an experience having Saif Sharif on the show. No, Saif, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure as the folks have been listening, I'm sure you're thinking of questions, comments. I know that you guys comment on the Measure Slack, and we love hearing from you. So if you've got those, please hit us up on Twitter or on the Measure Slack or the Facebook page. It's great to hear from folks who are listening, and not even when you just agree or like something, but even when you disagree or, you know, need to join me in helping the world understand how to pronounce GIF. So, anyways, so we, no, it's been great. Thanks so much for my co-host, Tim Wilson, and I keep analyzing.
For listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
But if you pause too long, Tim may start talking again, and
then you'll never get the foreground. You don't have a running Google sheet like I do, so that you already have.
Tim, we've talked about this. Are you familiar, Saif, with the old show, The Odd Couple?
Which one are you? Are you the Oscar, or are you?
I'm not the fastidious one. That's for sure.
He's the Oscar to my Felix.
It's so good, but now you know the secret. Anyways, it's really good. It's that tension that keeps the show interesting. People, when will Tim snap? I think the other aspect of this is, I don't know where I'm going next. Oh, that is almost correct. Not
rock flag and wienermobiles.